Hey guys, I'm an addict named Rachel. So as you know, I just celebrated 1 year clean, and for that I'm truly grateful. But you know, I have to remind myself every day that today I am drug-free, but I am not drug-proof. Through working the 12 steps, honestly, working them, even if that means having to go back over them again once I think I'm done with it, and being in the fellowship and in conscious contact with my higher power, I never have to wake up dope sick or hungover or in a jail cell again. And that's probably the biggest miracle ever, apart from giving birth to a healthy baby girl. So my problem started before I was even born. My birth mom was 15 years old, and as courageous as she was, she ran away from her mother's home to give me up for adoption, because her mom didn't want her to give me up for adoption, but my mom was a firm believer that she didn't want her daughter raised in a broken home like she was. So as I got older, I was told this story by my mom that my birth mom hadn't picked out a family yet when she was already in the hospital. At last minute, they had sent my parents' application over, and since it was a fax, it was blacked out. So she had no idea what my parents looked like. She chose them based off of what they said. And I am so lucky for that. I believe she chose them because they're such amazing people. They already had been married 20, 21 years by the time that they had adopted me. So I remember it's probably about fifth grade when I had an open adoption, so I always knew I was adopted. But it was probably about fifth grade when I really grasped what that meant, and I knew I was different. I felt so different on the inside. My mom sent me to the school counselor, who I think was also adopted, maybe. And that helped somewhat, but it still couldn't take away the feeling of being different and like there was a void inside of me. Still to this day, logically, I know it was the best thing for me, but subconsciously, I can't compute that. I have issues of feeling unworthy, not good enough, unlovable, because my own mother gave me up. So I was raised in a home with no alcohol, no drugs, no cigarette smoke, no nothing. literally nothing. My parents were pretty strict too. You know, I had the parents that if I wanted to go over to someone's house, they had to meet the mom or the dad beforehand. They had to meet the people, and then they had to drive me over there and drop me off. It was really embarrassing. But the summer before sixth grade, we moved from Westlake to what I consider my mom's dream house that my dad built her, to live in Lake Travis so we could have our horses in our backyard. So as you can imagine, starting middle school, being that age in a new school district, was really hard. I had known a few girls due to horseback riding, and I started doing Pop Warner cheer and got really involved in dance. And I thought that was my spot, but I quickly found out that those girls that I thought were my friends weren't really my friends at all. And it was more than just the growing up cattiness. I remember being so miserable and upset, and there was nothing I could do about it, you know? My reaction to that, how I dealt with that, was at a very young age, probably sixth or seventh grade, I started cutting myself to get that release that I needed. And I can't remember if it was my mom or my dad that saw my wrist one day, but I was like, oh, fuck. Okay, they know I got to do somewhere else. So I switched to my legs, and that was my way to get release. But eventually that wasn't enough. So through middle school, I was bullied quite often, and I didn't really know why, couldn't figure out why. So the summer before ninth grade, I tried out for the high school dance team, and I made it. Then I was convinced, all right, you're going to fit in now. This is your place. You got this. Nope, not the case at all. I remember sitting in the car with my mom before fish camp, begging her not to make me go in because I didn't want to go in and face these people. So I think it was the summer before ninth grade. I don't remember the girl's name. I remember her brother's name. His name was Scott because he was really cute and he was older. But the girl had invited me over for a sleepover. And she was kind of in the popular crowd. So I was like, oh, okay, this could be cool. Somehow I convinced my mom to let me go over there. And that night, man, I fell in love. I don't think the girl's parents were even there. I think they left after my mom had dropped me off. I don't remember. But the girl asked me, hey, you want a drink? I was like, well, I've never drank before. She pulled out a bottle of Wild Turkey. I will never forget that taste, man. Man, I was in heaven. I was in love. You know, for the first time ever, I didn't feel pain inside anymore. I felt like it was okay to be me. That quickly ended too. You know, the next morning I had to go back home. I don't know how I wasn't hungover, but I wasn't, because we didn't know. So school started. Everything was going okay, I guess. I continued cutting myself. I remember it really started to go down the hill after we had, like, our initiation, when the senior girls came to our house, like, super early in the morning and blindfolded us and took us to do all sorts of crazy things. Like, I remember being blindfolded, proposing to people, and they had us on the track, like, in the grass on some radio station, like, doing our high kick dance routine and screaming our chant. Which I don't really know the point of that. But I remember, like, my big sister, she made me crawl on my hands and knees into my classes that day. And I just remember feeling like that was so degrading. Like, I thought these people were supposed to be my family. But here they were making me do all this stupid stuff because it was bringing them joy, laughter. So that continued to escalate, and I was in ninth grade about the time MySpace was really popular. So people made a MySpace page about me called the Slutometer, and they had superimposed my face onto other people's, like, porn stars' bodies and stuff, and had said a lot of mean, nasty, horrible things to me. I printed it out and showed my mom. Oh, I'm getting ahead of myself. Before that happened, I didn't want to go to school. Like, I was always sick, always in the nurse's office, always doing something. But when I printed that out and showed my mom, the first thing she did was take it to the school. And she wanted them to fix it because she wanted me to rise above there. The school looked at her and they said, if it was my daughter, I would take her out of this school. So my mom, being the loving, caring mom she is, that's exactly what she did. My parents are so honest, they didn't want to use a different address, a fake address, or even a friend's address, so I could go to a different school. So they went and rented an apartment so I could transfer to Bowie High School. So that's what I did. When I got to Bowie, I had known some people from church youth group, or their older sisters. I knew some people, and I was friends with them for a while, but it seemed like after they came over for a sleepover one night, like, they didn't want to be my friend anymore. And being where I'm at now, I feel like part of that is because when you're in high school and you're going over to a sleepover, you expect there to be, like, alcohol and being able to get fucked up. That wasn't the case in my house. And I was an only child, so I had a little twin bed and a little tiny room. So we would make pallets on the floor in the living room. So I was at, I don't know how long I was at Bowie for, but I started meeting, like, I was in bio class with some of the older kids, and they were, like, the scene kids. So I started hanging out with them because I was really into, like, hardcore metal music, and that's what they listened to. And I'll still remember the girl gave me the name of this lady at Visible Changes so I could go get my hair done. And I printed out all these pictures, and my mom, like, picked what was appropriate and what's not. And I came out there looking like a skunk. Like, my hair was all blonde on top and then a black streak in the back. And my mom will tell you, she walked into the hair salon that day and was like, no, that can't be my daughter. But it was. At that time, I also had started another form of self-mutilation, which was body piercings. Since I wasn't old enough, I did them myself with safety pins. And I remember having to try to take all of them out so my mom wouldn't see, because I had done my ears like all the way up and snake bites and everything. And I think he finally saw. You know, moms usually do see. So that's the way I coped for a while. Actually, ever since I was little, really, with being different. I think the first time I got highlights, I was in fifth grade. So it started as highlights, turned into years of dyeing my hair, to getting tattoos underage, to stretching my ears, to everything. Because I wanted to look on the outside how I felt on the inside. I thought if I looked what was perceived, especially then, as different, then I would feel normal on the inside. My grades started slipping really badly at Bowie. I didn't make the dance team there. I was spinning into a downward spiral of depression again. And I remember my mom talking to my tutor about what to do, and she had suggested this private school, the Cabelli School, which was in downtown Austin. So third school in 1 year. But I started there. And when I started, it was 6th through 12th grade, 60 kids in the whole school, I think. So that was the first time I think I really made two actual friends. But of course, there was trouble right off the bat because, you know, me being an addict, I wanted everything. So I go for the cutest guy out of all the guys. There was only three girls in my grade, I think three or four boys. And we started dating. And in order to get into this school, you had to do like a trial there where you had to go for 2 days to shadow somebody. And I got caught kissing this boy. So you can imagine how my track record started out there. But Cabelli was a really good school. You know, it was really small and intimate. We called our teachers by their first names. It wasn't like regular learning. We had like different types of subjects. And I stayed there till junior year. But sophomore year when I went to England? Sophomore year, so we had this thing called Project Week, where 1 week out of the year we could do whatever we wanted to do, and then 1 week a year had to be giving back to the community. So in high school, I was really involved with Invisible Children, so that's what I did for my giving back to the community. And then for what I wanted to do, I decided I wanted to go to England. Don't know how I agreed to let my parents do that, but it was me and one other girl, two boys, a male teacher that had lived in England, and then a female teacher. So off I went to England. And I remember we were sitting in a restaurant one night, and we ordered apple cider, because we, you know, like in the States, apple cider's apple cider to teenagers. Well, over there, it's alcoholic. And we didn't get carded, and our teacher was letting us drink. Yeah, you didn't know that. And this is the funny part. So he was letting us drink, but he made us call our parents to ask if we could go to a hookah lounge to smoke tobacco. So I remember I was in love with all the people there. I made some friends that I talked to for a while. I wanted to move there so badly, but it wasn't going to happen. And eventually, I'm leaving the part out about Mari. Okay, so ninth grade, I started skating every weekend at Playland, and I met this girl, Mari, and we instantly became best friends. So every weekend we were either at my house or her house, preferably her house, because her dad would let us drink. Her mom would let us drink. Her dad was in a band. So it was always a party. And I remember my parents picking me up one Sunday morning, and I was rolling around in the back seat of the car. And my mom looked at my dad and goes, "She's acting like she's hungover." And I was like, "I am not." I was so mad, but I was probably still drunk. But my first run-in with the law came upon with Mari. Her dad took us down to the coast over spring break for 2 years to go duck hunting with some of his friends. And his friend had a son that was about our age, and we were all drinking. For some reason, thought it would be a really good idea to take the golf cart out, so we started driving the golf cart down the road, and Mari happened to stand up. Like, you know how golf carts have that thing on the back? She was trying to stand up on the outside because we're drunk and we're stupid, and as she did that, we passed a cop. So the cop pulled us over, which is really weird, getting pulled over on a golf cart. So, of course, he asked us what we were doing. There was open containers right there. We tried to lie and say we weren't drinking, but he knew better than that. But we were underage. So the guy who was driving, they arrested him. But they called Mari's dad and told him to come get us. So he did. And I don't think he ever spoke a word of it to my mom either. So that's when my drinking career probably really started. As soon as I got home, I was miserable because I didn't have the alcohol to take away the pain anymore. Junior year, I decided I wanted out. I was done. I didn't want to live with my parents anymore. I knew what I wanted to do in my life. So I started going to an alternative school where you go when you get kicked out of normal school. I think I was the only kid there that didn't have a probation officer. So my mom was real thrilled about that. But the reason I went there was because I could graduate early. So I ended up graduating a year early, and I was still 17, so I couldn't go where I wanted to go. My dream was to go to California. But we settled on me going to Houston to start school at Paul Mitchell. So I was still out of the house, but still somewhat close to home. My parents paid for my apartment. They paid for my gas. They paid for everything. I remember starting school, and I started seeing a pattern. I instantly felt like I didn't fit in. I instantly started having problems with people. I started skipping school. I was really into the music scene down there, and I had an apartment all to myself. So every time my friends, bands would come into town, which weren't really friends. They were people I just met at the show they played whenever. They would come over and stay the night, and it would just be a big drunk fest. I remember, I think there was a Vallejo that was like catty corner from my apartment. I started flirting with the guy there, and he like never ID'd me for alcohol, so I always had alcohol. I remember I wrecked my car one morning. I still think it's because the brakes went out, because I was not drinking the night before that I'm aware of. Never know. But I completely totaled my car. And it was a Sunday morning. My parents were at church, so I couldn't get them. And when I finally did, they were so mad, and they were on their way up there. I was screwed. I thought my house was trashed with beer cans everywhere, beer still in the fridge. Somehow I managed to get it cleaned up. Don't know how I did that. Another part I left out. This is how sick the disease is and how selfish it is. When I was 16 years old, the pastor of my family's church trusted me enough to house sit his house for him while him and his wife went out of town. It was during South by Southwest, too, and I was working at Hot Topic at the time, so I think it was a Skylit Drive and Sky Eats Airplane or something. We're doing a signing in the store, and I was really good friends with a Skylit Drive at that time, so I invited them over to the pastor's house. I figured, why not? And then it was time to go the next morning, and all the pastor's alcohol was gone, and I was like, fuck, what am I gonna do? Yeah, they called my mom when they got back. They were not happy about how trash the place was. I don't know if they told her about alcohol being missing, but I'm sure they definitely noticed. So eventually my partying got so out of hand that I couldn't go to school anymore. I had gotten a job at Visible Changes, but I was calling in every morning because I was still hungover from the night before. I guess that's the thing about, I don't know if it's everywhere or just Houston, but when you know people and all of those people are plugged into the bars and stuff, no one cares if you're 21. They don't even ID you. So I was dating this body piercer for a while, so he got me into everywhere. And that was just a nightmare. Eventually, my lease was coming up, so I had to go back home to my parents. And I was insanely depressed. I couldn't do anything there. I started going to school. I made friends with, I was still going to Paul Mitchell, but I made friends with like one of the admissions people there. And I started hanging out with her because she did roller derby. But yeah, but she would give me alcohol and let me drink and everything. So that was that relationship. Was I 18 when I left? Or still 17? Okay, so when I was 18, I decided, I'm 18, I'm going to California now. So I did. I think my parents gave me a check for like $2,000 or something. And I went to Houston to pick up my friend Kelly, and we just took off. We had no idea where we were going to live, what we were going to do, nothing. All I knew is that the music scene was really big out there, and there was a lot of cute band boys, so I was there. Me and Kelly didn't last long. She probably came back to Texas a month or two after we had lived in California. Because I was really confused at that time. I didn't know what I wanted. I just wanted to feel better. So that's when I met Danny. And I started dating her, and that's really what destroyed mine and Kelly's friendship, because I started going over to Danny's house all the time. Now, Danny, I was 18, Danny was 23, I think, and still lived with her grandma and her dad, so great pick. I remember the first night I met her was the first night I did ecstasy for the first time. And man, I just thought alcohol was the love of my life. I had this little teacup chihuahua, Stella, at that time. And I remember putting glow sticks on her and making her run all around the house, thinking it was the most awesome thing ever. We went on like a 7-day ecstasy bender. And I remember coming down and like really finally sobering up and looking at my walls in the living room of the house we had just rented. And it was spray painted black and had all sorts of shit spray painted all over it because we were high as fuck and we didn't know what we were doing. It was a great idea then, but not so much when you, yeah. I don't think we ever painted over it. I think we just kind of left. So I moved in with Danny and her grandma and her dad. Great idea. And that's when my life really got fucked. It was a really abusive relationship on both ends. I got my first only domestic violence charge, but that was my first real major run-in with the law where I actually got arrested and went to jail. I was still rolling and drunk when me and Danny started fighting and our pit bull jumped out of her crate and bit Danny in the hand. So I call 911 because what am I doing? My girlfriend's in front of me. Her hand's bleeding. I think she's going to die. So by the time the cops get there, I admit to them that, yeah, I was hitting her. I honestly didn't know what was going on. I remember them telling me, looking at my car in the front yard that had a Texas license plate, and me trying to tell them, I'm trying to go back home, because I thought I was trying to go back home. My parents were tired of getting the calls in the middle of the night of me crying because me and Danny were fighting again or this and that. And he told me, well, Miss Martin, I don't think you're going to be going back to Texas today. He put the handcuffs on me and threw me in the back of the car. So off to Linwood County Jail I went, which is not a very fun place to be. I remember being completely scared and alone and not knowing what to do. And I finally had got a hold of my parents, and they were shocked. There was nothing they could really do all the way from Texas. They contacted an attorney told them, you know, it was my first charge. I probably would get out, which I did 3 days later. And I got out. I went to court. I had to do domestic violence classes, and they put me on summary probation. But that was a really dark time in my life. So eventually I kind of got my head out of my ass and started going back to Paul Mitchell in Costa Mesa, where I finally graduated from. But to graduate, I found out, you know, I'm so tired, blah, blah, blah. So I found this doctor that started prescribing me Adderall, and he was prescribing me 430 milligrams a day. I was probably taking about 8. And then I started snorting them because swallowing them wasn't good enough. And, you know, I'm sick, and I liked the way it felt going up my nose. Eventually, that wasn't enough, though. It was for me to graduate, but after I graduated, I had gotten back in contact with somebody from my MySpace scene kid days who is now a cocaine dealer. So I ended up linking up with him and started doing cocaine. I remember more countless fights. I even moved out at a time. My mom paid for me to live in this condo in Long Beach, like 3 blocks from the beach, so I could get away from Danny and hopefully like try to get my life on track. But it wasn't long until Danny was in that condo with me. And I was spiraling out of control. So I called my mom one day and I told her I need to come home. If I don't come home, I'm going to get in trouble. I've been doing cocaine. My dad was on a plane to get me just a couple days later, and me and my dad drove back from California with everything that I owned in my little piece of shit Honda Sonata car. I remember, I still had some Adderall, guys, so I remember as we were getting close to where the Border Patrol was, thinking, oh, fuck, what am I going to do if they want to search the car? Nah, they're not going to want to search it. There's too much shit in here for them to go through. So luckily they didn't. But I got home probably 3 months before I turned 21, and it was really good. I started working out all the time. I got a job at Whole Foods. I was being responsible again. And then my 21st birthday came. I went out to dinner with my parents and this guy that had worked for my dad for years, and it became like an older brother. And we went to the Cheesecake Factory. It was my birthday. I, of course, ordered beer. My parents will tell you to this day they saw it happen that night. They saw it in my eyes. They saw the switch come back on. It was like the difference between night and day. Me drinking that night had me off to the races. My managers, even two of my managers from Whole Foods, decided they were going to take me out to 6th Street for my 21st birthday. I don't remember any of it. I remember waking up in some girl's apartment I didn't know the next morning and having to go to work still drunk. And it was the worst thing ever. But it didn't stop me. Shortly after that, this girl I had been friends with introduced me to her cousin, and we started dating. And I pretty much went from being an alcoholic to being a meth head and a heroin addict, probably within about a week of dating this guy. And we would do some really stupid shit together. You know, he made his money by selling weed. We'd fly back from Oakland with 50 pounds of weed in our suitcase. And the amount of shit we've done, I can't fathom how we were so stupid, but we were. So that was my first experience with heroin, and I couldn't stop. Me and Mikey were also in an abusive relationship, and eventually, I think he moved back home or something. Something happened, and we weren't together anymore. Then I met my soon-to-be ex-husband. Ex-husband. We're just going to call him ex-husband. Who was a heroin dealer. So, of course, I want to be your friend. Maybe I want to be more than your friend. I knew him. I met him on his birthday. So I met him December 28th, 2014. We got married February 17th of 2015. Yeah. We knew each other 2 months. But I knew that as long as I was with him, I didn't have to pay for my dope or worry about where I was going to get it from, and that's all that mattered to me. A month after we got married, he violated probation, so he went back to jail. So once again, I was alone with nowhere to go. That's when I met the best people I've ever met in my life. Not really. I met the people that were almost the death of me. For some reason, I thought it was really cool if you were in a gang. I wanted to be a part of that world. I thought it was the coolest thing ever, you know. At one point, I ran around with lightning bolts shaved in the side of my head saying, Featherwood this, Featherwood that. Everyone called me Feather, and I was so proud of it. I remember my mom telling me one day that somebody that she knew, that I knew, that was somehow on my Facebook, had seen me posting all this stuff about that. And I was really embarrassed because, you know, that really wasn't who I was at all. It was just what was there in front of me that I could grab onto. So I started dating this guy who was AB, and that went great. So great. We lived with our friend who is, I mean, so... Jackie's 47. I'm 27. That's how sick I am. He's the same age as my birth father. So we lived with our friend Dish in a house that his mom bought. And I think it got raided 3-4 times in the extent that I lived there. But I didn't learn because Dish's mom always bailed us out of jail, no matter what. When I got caught stealing from Target and HEB, I called my parents. They didn't answer. You know, they had to do what they had to do to quit enabling me. But I called Dish's mom. She answered and bailed me out right away. To this day, I'm so grateful that my parents stopped enabling me, because if they would have kept doing what they had done for me before, I wouldn't be standing in front of you guys tonight. So I got involved with a big fraud ring, started doing a lot of counterfeiting because it was something I was good at. I was good with technology, good with all that shit, and I could get away with it for the time being. And eventually I did something to piss Jackie off. We had moved out to Lake Travis. He started shooting at me. And I had somebody take me to my parents' house because that was the only place I knew I could go that was safe. My parents didn't even want to open the door to let me in. And in order to be let in, they went through all of my stuff to make sure that I had nothing in there. You might want to close your ears. Yeah. While they were distracted doing something else, I had snuck a syringe that was loaded with heroin into my sleeve and proceeded to shoot it up in my parents' middle bathroom that night. And the next morning, they took me back to Dish's house, and had given me Visa gift cards because they thought gift cards were safe. Well, I figured out how to get cash off of them, so that all went to heroin too. And then, so I had already met my baby's father at that time. I hate calling him baby daddy, but you know, I don't know what else to call him at this point. So, you know, I was on to the next one. I got with him. He sold a lot of meth. He wanted to get me off heroin. So we went to Chicago for a week. He got me off heroin. I was doing copious amounts of meth, though. And, like, way too much. And we came back to town, finally. And I think I probably did heroin twice again after that. But it didn't matter because I had just traded one for the other and was all about meth now. Once again, I'm in an abusive relationship, insanely abusive. He had convinced me that it was my fault the clutch went out in his car and that if I didn't figure out how to get him a new car, he was going to have me killed. So I did what I know how to do best. I went to car dealership and got a BMW and somebody else's information for him. And then the greed set in. Okay, I got you a car. You're gone. Fucking who knows who. You're not here with me. I want my own car. So I go and get another BMW for me to drive. Yeah, that's how crazy the disease is, guys. I remember I found out I was pregnant and I had taken 4 pregnancy tests, and he told me that I had to get an abortion, and I didn't want to get an abortion. I didn't feel like that was right. And one of the final fights we had was him telling me he was going to cut my own unborn child out of me and make me eat her. So I wanted to stop, but I didn't know how. I couldn't. I remember my mom telling me, how are you going to raise a child? You're not going to be able to. And she mentioned adoption, and I didn't want to do that to my child because I knew how much it hurt me being adopted growing up. So I started praying casually for a way out. And that prayer was answered on April 23rd, 2018, when the FBI and the DEA raided our house. I got arrested for, of course, the BMWs. The one good thing her father did for me was sign an affidavit saying that I was not involved with any of the drugs. I didn't know anything about it. And the crazy part was I almost picked up the backpack to carry out with me that day that had a kilo of meth and heroin in it, but something told me not to, so I didn't. So that was my God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself moment. I had never been so happy to see law enforcement before in my life. It was a sigh of relief. It was over. Then I get to Del Valle. Yeah, not the same feeling anymore. I remember I finally got a hold of my parents, and I was like, if y'all don't get me out of here, I'm going to kill myself. And my mom just kept telling me, think about your child. So my prayer turned from, God, if you get me out of this, I'll never do it again, to, okay, God, my way has not worked. Show me your way. A day or two after that, my cellmate had told me about Austin Recovery and that I could come here and have my baby here with me. So at first I lied to my mom and I told her, there's already a bed there waiting for me. You just have to bail me out. But my mom's had a little bit of experience with my lying by this point. So, of course, she calls Austin Recovery and finds out that's not true, but she does get me on the wait list. Thank God. So, while I was in jail, I did everything that I possibly could to help myself. I did every single program that I could. I had my mom order all sorts of recovery books, and I really got to know myself for the first time ever in my entire life. And the day finally came for me to be released and come to Austin Recovery. And that was the start of my new life. I got here and instantly was like, oh, fuck. It's another treatment center that's AA-based. I'm not a fucking alcoholic. I want NA-based. Well, while I was here, I discovered that I am an alcoholic because my problems started with drinking, but eventually the alcohol wasn't enough, so I had to switch it to something else. So while I was here, I started rebuilding my relationship with my family, with the people who really matter. My parents never gave up on me, ever. They always just wanted the best for me. If they could have saved me from myself and my addiction, they would have done so a long time ago, but they knew they couldn't. They knew it wouldn't happen until I was ready. And I truly believe that God gave me my beautiful daughter in order to make me ready. I gave birth in here. I gave birth 2 days, 3 days, whatever, apart from Constance. And, you know, cherish these relationships you have in here, guys. It's so fucking awesome being able to call people that you've been in treatment with, that know you, that are going through the same shit that you are. It hasn't been easy. It really hasn't. I've faced a lot of difficulties. You know, the day I got out of treatment early because I was having surgery to get all my teeth pulled out and all implants put in, and happening the day after I got out of treatment, you know, that was, whew. So I had to lay there for 7 days, literally every hour. Okay, you didn't have to take pain medicine the last hour. You can make it through the next hour. And I did. And that's, I'm almost more proud of that, that I got through that after I'd already been clean, than I am about the fact that I got clean. But I've come a long way from where I was. I was the person that you would hide everything from before. You didn't want me in your house. My own parents wouldn't even let me sleep in their driveway because they didn't know what I was going to do. I couldn't be trusted. I was a master manipulator, as we all are. But at the end of the day, it comes down to God did do for me what I couldn't do for myself. And because of that, I'm standing here in front of you guys today. And I'm able to tell you my story and share my experience, strength, and hope. So I want to thank you all for being a part of my recovery tonight.